Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff and Robin Martinez is here with me today. Good morning, Robin.
Hi, Joyce. It's a beautiful day here in Denver.
Yay. I'm at a conference in Boston, so if the audio is a little poor today, you'll know why. But we have a very exciting guest with us today, Dr. Paula Goldenberg, a geneticist from the Massachusetts General Hospital. And we're going to talk about our favorite theme, which is patient support over the Internet. So just to remind everybody, Robin is the primary moderator of the Smart Patients resource for people with kidney cancer and related diseases. I am a resource for von Hippel-Lindau disease in a number of online resources, too. And Dr. Goldenberg has created a new resource for people with an 22q11. Did I do that wrong? 22q11.
That's 22q11.2.
Okay. Yes. So welcome, Dr. Goldenberg.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Joyce. I'm really excited to be able to participate in your Powerful Patient podcast. So I'd like to, if it's okay, can I talk about what this 22Q11 is?
That would be great. Thank you. Give us a little background on it and also sort of what the prevalence is. So how many people are affected?
So about previously we thought 1 in 2,000 to 1 in 4,000 births, but it may be more common than that from a recent prenatal study. So it's actually more common, but a lot of people are probably not diagnosed. So there's a big movement for awareness with the family organizations and the nonprofits to try and get more people diagnosed. 22q deletion is...
The pediatrician's not aware of what it might look like, or how subtle are the symptoms?
Well, they can be pretty, like, in your face in some sense. If a baby's born with a characteristic heart defect, we know what to do, and cardiologists will even send the test. But people that have very mild problems and maybe normal hearts may be diagnosed much later in life, maybe even in their 30s or 40s. So there's such a variable amount of severity and also in variability as far as the problems in 22q deletion. The common problems are outflow heart defects, so problems with the blood vessels that are leaving the heart, and they can have some pretty serious heart defects. And then another issue could be an immune deficiency, and some babies are now picked up on newborn screens when they're screening for severe combined immune deficiency. And so the babies with very low immunity will be picked up on that, which is really helpful as far as getting early treatment for them. Another potential problem is something called hypoparathyroidism, which is a really long word that means the calcium levels will go low and even to the point of making people have seizures because the gland that only controls calcium may not be in sufficient amounts, like may not be fully developed. And then
while there are a few things that are pretty overt, that many of these things are pretty subtle and may not get picked up, and that's why you're not getting as many diagnoses as there should be?
Right. So, say a person has a long-term history of seizure, if nobody checked the calcium level, they might not have figured out that it was from a low calcium level. They may be on anti-seizure medicines for a long time and then maybe figured out that they have low parathyroid, but still it would take an endocrinologist to think, well, maybe this is from 22q deletion, which has several names, one of which is DeGeorge syndrome, and the other one's velocardiofacial syndrome, is among other names. So they have to think of it to send the test.
So you've been dealing with this disease in the clinic at the hospital for years. What inspired you to start your Facebook group? I understand you just started it in July.
Right. Well, actually, that was the result of I started the clinic actually here at Mass General about a year and a half ago, but before that I had clinics in other institutions, and I had a new genetic counselor who's a millennial who said, Paula, her name's Lauren Gottsell, and she's awesome. And she said, hey, I just made this Facebook page. What do you think? Do you want to look at it? Should we do that? And it was great. Like, I saw it and I thought, oh, this is terrific. And so we launched the Facebook page, and I had this idea of just posting information. So a lot of families have a hard time accessing information about the syndrome. And I thought this would be kind of a way of letting people in the area know about our clinic. And so I was just kind of posting every day for the first month about various topics, and then it kind of ballooned from there.
So in the 5 months that you've been up, how many followers do you have?
Well, we started with, I just invited my entire friends list, which includes people that I trained with in medical school or residency or some adult family members of that have children with 22q deletion. I'm in that network also because I have a son with 22q deletion syndrome myself. And then, people like in my dog club. I mean, there's like this, everybody's Facebook group has friends have like, sure. Family members. And so I invited them to like our page. And then from there, and then people would suggest, like seeing these postings that I was doing kind of in the local area, suggest to friends to come to our page. And then I started cross-posting on, now it's up to about 30-plus different interest groups on Facebook for 22q deletion. And we've gone from then, so zero in July, the beginning of July, now to 2,200 people with that have liked our page. And then there are people in over 60 countries, so all around the world, that are following this page. Primarily people in English-speaking countries, but there are people who I think use Google Translator. Like, there was a bunch of people all of a sudden, like, we went from 0 to 11 in Poland in one week, or, like, from, like, 15 to 35 in Holland in a week, or in Guatemala. We've got a large group in Guatemala.
So people are signing on as a group, basically.
Yeah,
Yeah,
like probably one person finds out about it and then spreads it amongst their friends and says, look, you guys need to look at this.
Yeah, that's really interesting because there are so many parents who need support on a genetic problem like this, and maybe they've been told what the problem is and watch out for this and that, but maybe they're not getting any counseling on anything else.
Right. And actually, I mean, it's not just parents. We have adults with a deletion also that are asking about their own health. And in fact, we've got one kind of senior adult that asked me, like, well, what about for, seniors with 22q deletion? What kind of information is there about our health care? So it's, kind of doing the entire age spectrum and people with the deletion as well as people with children with the deletion.
I suppose in even recent years past, there weren't that many people who survived the really serious cases up into adulthood and senior citizenship.
Oh, exactly, right. With the, since 75% of people with 22q deletion have heart defects, you can imagine back 20, 30 years ago, most did not survive. So, and maybe the adults that we're seeing are more on the 25% and the people who did not have heart defects. So, yeah. Yeah, I think you're right about that.
Interesting, yeah.
And then those people, if they're diagnosed, it's because they might have a child with the deletion.
Oh, that's something I hadn't thought about, because normally this is a spontaneous thing, right?
Yes.
It's only if you actually have the syndrome that you pass it on.
Right, right. So, yeah, 90% are spontaneous, and about 10% are familial, meaning they, you know, a parent with the deletion, it would be a 50-50 chance with each pregnancy, unless there were other measures to adjust that risk. But I think as time goes on, we've got a large group of young adults who've survived their heart surgeries and they're doing just fine. So I think over time, like in the next 20, 30 years, that's going to change and there will be a lot more familial cases being born.
So the people who have survived this don't have a real fear of passing it on because they know it can be dealt with?
It could be. And actually, yes, we could deal with that with pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. I'm not sure you're familiar with that.
Yes, I am, but please explain.
Okay. So with pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, what can happen is you can do a test tube fertilization of the mother and the father's eggs and sperm, and then take off one cell, or, you know, I guess I'm hearing now from a recent genetic counseling conference, maybe they take off several cells and check them for 22q deletion, and then only implant the embryos that don't have the deletion. So that would be a way of adjusting the risk from 50% down to less than 1%.
Right. This is real progress in for people who have a genetic defect that they don't want to pass on.
Right. Exactly. So we can adjust it. The another thing we found with our social media site is that, and I was kind of surprised by this, but I have a lot of families or adult patients that are in rural locations. So maybe they went to, you know, the big city and the big children's hospital for a heart repair early in life, and then they went back home, and really their healthcare management is being done at home and by physicians who don't really know the healthcare needs of people with 22q deletion. And then, of course, like people around the world, like somebody in Norway sent us a comment, oh, thank you for letting us have these guidelines. It's been really helpful because my son's pediatrician has no idea about what to do at what time, and it's really improved his health care.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yes, because when you deal with something all the time like you do, you understand it, you see it, you recognize it, and you know what to do for the problems. But the average doctor may have never seen this before or may never have realized that they've seen it before.
Right, exactly. And, you know, we can reach that primary care physician through traditional methods like the journals and things like that. But if they don't know that such publications are there, they don't know that they can look them up and find them. But if we put them in the hands of patients or parents, they'll bring them to the appointment and say, here's the growth charts for 22q deletion, or here's the health management guidelines for 22q deletion. I really want you to follow this for my child. Then it's going to happen.
That's exciting. The internet has made healthcare so much more personalized.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I'll put on information posts about things like, oh, there's a certain brain malformation that was formerly thought to be rare in 22q deletion. And all of a sudden, there are all these families saying, my son has signs of that brain malformation that you're describing. I took him for an MRI scan, and he has that. And we always thought it was cerebral palsy, but it isn't.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is there something that would it be treated differently?
Probably not, because, I mean, the main thing is you manage the seizures, you would think of seizure risk in somebody with cerebral palsy also from the brain damage, from a stroke or something
right.
like that. But it may then help families, like, you know, just understand, okay, this is how it happened, was the brain didn't grow in the same way on both sides of the brain or something like that. And and one thing it can be helpful with is to know that there was nothing that was done during pregnancy that could have caused this. Like, because you can have prenatal strokes, right? So there was nothing during pregnancy that caused this brain difference. It was from the deletion itself.
That is good to know, because I know a lot of parents feel guilty if they have a child with cerebral palsy and they think, perhaps I could have done something to prevent this, brain injury.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, definitely.
So are you seeing a full range of 22q patients?
Oh, yes, yes. So I see patients anywhere from babies to senior citizens. Actually, I see a fair number of my patients are young adults, because maybe they were being taken care of at Boston Children's and they've kind of outgrown the children's hospital, and so they're trying to transfer to adult providers, which we have plenty of at Mass General Hospital. This is one of two centers that I can figure in the United States that take care of adults with 22q deletion.
And also you see a full range of impairments, correct?
Oh, yes,
from
yes. We have patients with very mild features and may have even gotten through school with little or no special education. One thing I didn't mention is often you can have learning problems with 22q deletion, not necessarily always at the, you know, intellectual disability end of the spectrum, but still some like learning problems. But some people get through and are very high functioning. And I have certainly patients that are high functioning and then patients that need a lot of help. And I have like a very large referral base, both pediatric and adult, to address whatever is going on.
You know,
that's wonderful.
That reminds me of...
Go ahead.
That reminds me of people that I knew who had made it to college who had various types of learning disorders, and nobody had ever really tracked down a source for these disorders. And they
mm-hmm.
were varied, widely varied, but maybe it was a genetic problem that they had had, and in those days, nobody looked for that.
That's right. That's right. And even now, I mean, I think if somebody's mild affected with a learning disability, it's not really standard of care to send a microarray on someone for that. So that would detect 22q deletion, and it's kind of a screening test like we used to do with chromosome tests. And so those people are some of the ones that are missed, especially if they don't have multiple birth defects, like a heart defect, the calcium problem, or a palate defect. So they may not be diagnosed.
Let me go back to the more general topic of using the social media structure in order to inform both patients and doctors. You were saying that there are guidelines, there is information for doctors. If the doctor went out and Googled it, as they say now in medical school,
mm-hmm.
you probably would find the information. But bringing the awareness that he needs to look for this particular kind of information is always a hurdle. And getting the information to the families so that they can take it to their physicians is really a wonderful way of filling in that gap a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of the whole point of all these information posts, because the more you know, the more you know what your child needs. Our saying is knowledge is power. There are some scary aspects to 22q deletion and a lot of families have a lot of worries about this. So people with 22q deletion have an increased risk of schizophrenia. So even if a child did fairly well all the way through, didn't have a heart defect, they have an increased risk of developing schizophrenia even in late adolescence, early adulthood. So another thing we do is post for parents who would be possibly the first people to notice warning signs of mental illness, mm-hmm. serious mental illness, so mm-hmm. that they can be aware and get people to treatment right away, because the earlier you intervene in somebody who's developing a psychosis, the better off they do.
Right, right. You mentioned to me before the show that you had shared this with some colleagues at Mass General. Can you tell us a little bit about their reaction to this? Were they horrified or excited or what?
Yeah, I was a little nervous about that myself because it's a little bit, you know, not your traditional way of disseminating information. But actually, they were wildly excited, and even during the talk, people were signing up and liking my page on their phone. So yeah, it has grown by a huge amount. So it is exciting. I'm planning on, there's going to be a meeting for 22q deletion in July, and I'm going to submit this as an abstract for that meeting to talk about it. And by then, we'll have much more information about how things have gone, how people's health have changed. I'm hoping to do a survey. I've got to, you know, deal with the Institution Review Board, or the group that protects subjects. I would like to design a survey and run that past them so that I can put it up on my Facebook page so families could give us information about how the site has helped them or not, and you know, how has this worked for them doing it with social media. We also have a Twitter feed that's at 22Q11 Clinic, so some people follow us on Twitter also.
So most of what you've talked about so far has been sort of one-way communication, that you put out informational bulletins or something for people through this mechanism. Is there also some interaction amongst the families or with the families and you?
Oh, certainly. So we have we allow on the site an interactive component. So you can set up the site however you want. You can just put on information and nobody really interacts. But on our site, people can put in their own comments. And so that's actually how a number of families with this brain malformation called polymicrogyria found each other across the world. Or there were some families with another brain issue of high pressure in the fluid around the brain that found each other in the comments section. So people comment, and then also there's a way that people can ask me questions, because that's all public. People can also ask me questions in a more private way, or, you know, give me more detailed information about what's going on with themselves or their child through messages. They can send me private messages through the Facebook page.
Right, because those interactions are frequently the gold in such a site. Robin, you see that a lot. You want to speak to that?
Oh, it's amazing. We've had people come in with rare syndromes that perhaps can cause cancer. They're a genetic defect, and they haven't met anybody with the same problem, and all of a sudden they're being put in touch with the best clinicians in their country, with other parents who are facing the same difficulty, with other adults who are facing the same problems. And it's really great for the people who come in with kids to be able to talk with the adults who have the same problem and to see there is life after this syndrome, that people can have a pretty normal life.
Yes, yes, for sure. And we even have people that have a prenatal diagnosis getting on. Or there was one mom who just left a review that while her baby was in the NICU with that baby's medical problems, they were looking things up on our Facebook page.
That's exciting.
Great.
Now, one place you've made progress with the internet is to standardize the name of the problem.
Yeah, so that's, you know, that's an interesting situation. So what happened, like, there are a lot of different names for the syndrome because there were different doctors that were seeing it from their own perspective. So an endocrinologist talks about the calcium issues, the immune system. A cardiologist said, well, I see these certain heart defects. Or somebody, a speech pathologist in craniofacial clinic said, oh, there are these certain palate problems, plus they have heart defects and learning problems. But they were all looking at the same very wide number of problems from their own, like, smaller perspective. So once it was discovered that this one deletion could be associated with all of these different problems, that's when we really start calling it 22q11 deletion. And that's, I think, better for people's health, because if you think, oh, well, my child's problem is mostly the palate, then nobody's thinking about low calcium levels when that child has a seizure.
Right. Right. But one of the things that we did early on with VHL, because we had to standardize its name also, it had many different names, and especially in different countries, different ways of describing it. But when you do that, you put the standard name on the top, but you need all those other names somewhere on your description so that Google will find them, and all the people who've been given those other names will find you.
Right, and the other names are really personal, right? Like, so at the time of diagnosis, whatever that other name is, so, like, I can use myself as an example. My son was diagnosed with DiGeorge syndrome because he had calcium problems when he was a baby. And, you know, Dr. DiGeorge was really special to me. We went and met him. That was kind of central to our initial, you know, the words you first hear are the ones that kind of go to your heart as you're learning about it. And so you don't want to take those away from people.
Right. And the syndrome can present in so many different variants that in a way it's good to have some way of dividing people up as well as a way to unite them.
Right, right. Like, so the basic gist is, okay, if somebody comes with bilocraniofacial, I'll think, okay, like if I just hear that they're coming, I'll think, oh, okay, so they probably have issues with their palate. It makes it kind of easy. That's mm-hmm. And I know that they probably initially presented at a craniofacial clinic.
It's really interesting on Google to look at some of the images, because you'll see one page saying, here is the typical presentation, here is the typical facial appearance of these people. And then you'll see another page saying, here is the typical facial appearance of these people, and it's entirely different because they have a different presentation.
Right, right. And I think, you know, all people with 22q deletion resemble their own families as well as they can resemble each other. It's and there can be sort of more of a, what we would, you know, a facial features that might look more like DiGeorge syndrome or might look more like bilocraniofacial, but they look a bit different.
Right.
And I think also they aren't it's not the kind of look that you would necessarily, you know, people walking down the streets might, you may not necessarily recognize in people.
Right, we're down to the last minute of the show. So I thank you so much, Dr. Goldenberg, for being with us. We will put more information about your Facebook page on the show page, but it's 22Q11. If you search for that in Facebook, you will find her page. And the most important thing for people who have any rare condition, which is less than 1% of the population. So 1 in 4,000 is rare. 1 in 32,000 is even more rare. And there are some diseases that are even more rare than that. But the most important thing is not to feel so alone. It's that aloneness that is terrible and very eroding. And if you can find other folks on the same path, it really does good things for your heart, as well as improving the outcome for yourself and your child. So thank you very much for facilitating that, Dr. Goldenberg, and thanks, Robin, as always. And thanks, everybody, for being with us. We hope that you'll be with us again next week. And meanwhile, be well and be a powerful patient. Take good care.